And the reason he dropped to us and came to our event was because teams didn't think he had the right attitude. And they didn't want that, even though his talent level was incredible, they weren't going to put him on their roster or draft him because they thought he would fizzle out. And they didn't think he'd mm-hmm. be a longevity guy. He comes to our event, everyone interviewed him, they instantly changed his mind, and he went on to have a pretty great career in his first couple of years. And so what I think is one of the most important skill sets that we can have as human
beings.
Have
you ever wondered why you're so terrible at building extraordinary relationships in your life and business? I know I sure have. Well, as luck shall have it, we have the perfect guest that holds the secrets to doing just that. In today's episode, JR sits down with Jake Kelfer, the best-selling author of Elevate Beyond, 25 Keys to Building Extraordinary Relationships in Life and Business. This guy is high energy, so prepare to be motivated. Welcome to the Instant Leverage Podcast.
All right, so we're here with Jake Kelfer. First of all, what's going on?
Man, JR, what's going on, man? It feels good to be here, pumped for this convo.
Yeah, I'm excited. So you're pretty motivational motherfucker for what it seems like.
Yeah, dude, I bring the heat.
Tell everybody a little bit about what you do and your credentials and stuff like that.
Sure. So in terms of a little bit about what I do, the high level overview is I'm an author, traveling speaker, and the founder of the Professional Basketball Combine, which has helped over 70 NBA draft prospects sign their first contract. And I'm sure we're going to dive into all that throughout today. But for me, there's really one mission in my life, and it's to elevate people to achieve their own definition of success. And I believe that if we have the action, if we're willing to take intentional and meaningful action, if we're willing to build the right relationships, and if we're willing to enjoy the journey, we're going to be A-okay throughout this game of life. So that's a little bit about what I do and how we can move forward.
So tell me a little bit about, like, how did you get into this and what exactly do you do for these athletes? How do you find them? All that good stuff.
So when I was growing up, you know, I wanted to be an NBA player, you know, like many 5'8 Jewish kids in the suburbs. Like, my dream was to be the next Magic Johnson, the next Steve Nash, right? Like, those were my idols growing up. But I quickly realized that by the time I graduated high school, being in the NBA wasn't going to be for me. But one thing I did have going for me was I was really smart, and I was friends with all these great athletes, basketball, football, baseball players. I was like, you know what? If I can't play in the NBA, why don't I represent these guys? That'll be the way I get closest to everybody. And so I went to college, went to USC, my dream school, did everything I could to be a sports agent. Well, as luck would have it, as things would turn out, the sports agency couldn't hire me and ended up going under shortly after. But when I graduated, I got a job with the Lakers. And that just turned out to be Kobe Bryant's final NBA season. And while I was there, my job.
Hold on. So did you get this job with the Lakers? Did you know somebody? Did you apply on like Indeed or whatever? Or how did that work?
Yeah. So for the Lakers job, it was one of those things where I was 3 or 4 months out from graduation, and I kind of had to go back to the basics, because I had been expected to work at this sports agency. I worked there in the summer internship. I'd worked there in the fall, and I was going to work there again in the spring. And I kind of figured out, okay, what do I know? And really, how can I get this thing to happen? So I basically made a list of every NBA and every NFL team that I was interested in working in from top down. Obviously, the Lakers being from SoCal, the Lakers were number one on my list. Mm-hmm. From there, I broke down into every department that I was interested in learning more about, and then wrote down and found the LinkedIn profiles, the handles for every single person that worked.
That's super smart. That's like exactly what I would tell somebody to do today. Did you just have a knack for that? Or you're like, this is a smart way to do it? Or did somebody tell you that you should go about it that way?
I was the kid in college who was always seeking to find an advantage, because I wanted to be the person who did things, quote unquote, better than anybody else. I wanted to be the youngest sports agent to sign the lottery pick. I wanted to advance myself. So I went to all the networking workshops. I did all the resume stuff. I did all the mock interviews that were offered. Like, I wanted to take full advantage of the resources that were available to me. And but I didn't know anybody really at the time at the Lakers organization. But the one person who I did reach out to, she happened to be a USC alumni. Okay. Now, whenever you're reaching out to people, and this is something we dive into a lot, but whenever you're reaching out to someone, it's how do you find a commonality that breaks down the barrier from being either a fan or an annoyance to being somebody that you want to get somebody to respond to you by. Mm-hmm. And I reached out to her. She was at the top of my list. She was in the corporate partnerships division, and I was stoked. I reached out to her. By the end of the conversation, she said, hey, Jake, I don't know what you got going on right now or if you already have a job, but if you don't, there's going to be an assistant position opening for this upcoming season. I think you're a great fit, but we wouldn't be able to interview until during the summertime. And that meant I was going to graduate in student loans with debt from USC without a guarantee of working for the job. But I went for it because I was like, this is the path that I need to go because not only would I get to work for the Lakers, and it would be a great opportunity to see the Staples Center for what it is, be around Kobe during his final season, but it's also, if my dream was to be an agent, where do all the agents go? Where do all the people in Hollywood go? They go to Laker games. And if I have access, I can leverage that access to meet new people. And it turned out to be an incredible investment on my part to work for the team that 1 year. So that's how I ended up getting the job. Had the interviews, crushed those, and then we got.
So that's like instant leverage right there. So you can use those same principles, and I'm sure you have in the business world too. Like, it doesn't stop there. You can use like stuff like that to meet successful people. Like one time I messaged Jesse Itzler on Instagram, and I was just like, hey, like, can I like hang out with you for a week? And like, I'll pretty much work for you, whatever. And he was like, sure. And he gave me somebody that works for him's email. And I was like, wow, that was pretty freaking easy. I never actually did it because I was like moving and all this stuff. But after that, I was like, it's not that hard in today's world to get in contact with cool people. So, so you got the job there, then what?
So I was working for the team, and my main job at Corporate Partnerships, the part that I loved the most about it was I would pick all the contests for all the contestants for all the halftime games. Mm-hmm. So basically people would come in, and I knew that we had the Toyota Skills Challenge where they would do the dribbling, the passing, the shooting, or the half court shot and win like $90,000 or whatever it was. And, or I'd do the meet and greets with them or whatever it may be that our brands had done for big partnerships. And what I quickly realized was that I had an opportunity to give somebody a once in a lifetime experience that they would never forget. And the part that I loved most about that job was the feeling and the satisfaction of giving somebody that experience and seeing how grateful they were following it, right? Because some people, it was their first time being at a Lakers game. Or maybe they had saved a lot of money because tickets were expensive to see Kobe. And they save a lot of money and then they get a chance to go on the court and take a half court shot. I mean, that's a dream. Like as a basketball fan and as for me, even like, that's one of the greatest things ever. And so I realized that I needed to create that experience everywhere I'd went in my life. But I thought, growing up, I thought that I had to become very successful. I thought I had to be that agent, make millions of dollars, have this clout. And then I could go back and start to help people, start to coach people, start to lead people, start to write books, start to speak, start to really make a difference. But what I realized in that moment, though, was everybody has an opportunity to make a positive impact on somebody else, whether that's with a customer, whether it's with just an everyday interaction. And so I came home one day, and after a game, I asked myself these questions. What do I know, and how can I help people? And I immediately asked those questions. And I set out on this journey to help people do what I did, which was get their dream internships, which was go to all the interview things. I wanted to help my younger brother, who was a college student at the time, and all the fraternity guys. I was like, hey, guys, I want to save you more time to party by giving you the secrets to getting your dream job when you leave. And they were like, okay, this is great. But when I first wrote about it, nobody seemed to give a shit, to be honest, because it was boring. It was blogs. And then I meet with a mentor and he says, I need you to turn this into a book. This is good content. I need you to add a little bit more, but this is a book. And I said, you're telling me I'm 22 years old, 23 at the time. He said, yeah, write this book. And I said, do you think people are going to listen to a 23-year-old talking about career development and standing out in the job market? And he goes, well, if you have the right message and the right things to say, people will of course buy it. So I interviewed, what I did was I interviewed people that were above where I was at, right? Because I was 1 year out of college. I had the experience of what I went through, but I wanted to couple that with the credibility of extraordinary experts, people at Apple, Morgan Stanley, the CEO of Movement, professional athletes, professors, to combine their knowledge of years and years and years of experience with what I had just gone through from a millennial's perspective. And that ended up becoming Elevate Beyond, which was my first book, which was released right when Kobe Bryant retired. So Kobe retired, I retired at the end of that season, and Elevate Beyond launched, and it kind of put me on this new trajectory of where I wanted to go and how I could really see myself making an impact rather than waiting for the future. but I could start now.
So then how did you get into helping athletes from there?
Right. So as you know, man, athletes and being a part of athletes was a big part of my ambition and my dreams. So when I wrote this book, it started kind of doing a lot of different things. I was speaking, I was still kind of dabbling with the sports agency stuff, but I wasn't sure the best path. And so at the end of 2016, the NBA announced there was going to be two-way contracts, which basically meant, the short version of it is that there were 60 new roster spots, two for every team, where players can go up and down from the NBA to the G League. And I said, that's it. What if I created a secondary NBA draft combine for guys that are right on the cusp of making the NBA to try to fill those spots and to try to give them a chance to stay in America, make more money, and achieve their dream of playing pro ball? And so basically what I did was I combined everything I'd experienced from being an entrepreneur, all my contacts that I had been developing in sports agency, and put it all together into this event that was going to become the professional basketball combine. And the idea was, if I can have 24 players, I'm going to have 15 to 20, 24 agents that are going to be at the event, and I can do business with them. I can call them. I can learn from them. And at the end of this, I can see what type of agent do I really want to become. And maybe I can join a team, or maybe I can, you know, have somebody train me or whatever it may be. And I was like, well, this is going to be an easy way to get access inside their circles to all of the agents that I was interested in getting access to. So that's how we really started to build this event. And that was my idea of how I could get in front of all these in high demand people at a quick and rapid rate, which ultimately led to a great success of the PBC, as we call it, Pro Basketball Combine. And it turned out that now 4 years later, you know, at the time of this recording, I've not become an agent, but instead we've built this event up to help over 70 guys. We've had a bunch of agents come through the program, and I've really gotten to see, you know, what type of agents are out there. I learned that a lot of the executives, that's given me that reputation, a lot of the media. And so that's been an incredible way to build a brand, but also to really make a difference, which goes back to my one truth, to elevate people to achieve personal success and freedom.
Okay. So I'm kind of like sports ignorant. I don't know shit about like hardly anything. I only watch UFC. So how, like the combine, how does that work? Is that, do they pay to come there? Like where's the monetization? How does that help them kind of take the next step?
Yeah. So the combine, so the NFL has one, the NBA has one. And basically what a combine is it's where you gather a group of the top athletes, you put them in a single location to have them perform and compete against each other so they can be evaluated against the top competition, right? Mm-hmm. And basically when you're there, you're doing the vertical jump, you're doing your lane agility, you're doing sprints, and you're getting measured by a series of metrics that will help people and scouts evaluate whether or not they want to draft you. That's at the core of a combine. And what we did was, the NBA has a main combine, which they invite the top 60 to 70 players. And there's 60 draft picks. Most of the players that go there are the ones that end up getting drafted in the upcoming draft. But once the NBA announced that these new roster spots existed, we knew that there needed to be a place for more guys to get exposure, more guys to get opportunity. So we created a one-stop shop for scouts to come see these secondary prospects, which was a benefit for them because they could see 24 guys in 2 days. The agents saw value because their players would get exposure that they wouldn't have otherwise gotten. And the players got a chance to showcase what they can do and prove to people that they really belonged. So there's a registration fee and there's partners and everything that's involved. But that's in a nutshell what the combine is. And we've basically given these guys a platform to launch themselves to that next level, which is, yeah, in their case, the G League, the NBA, overseas basketball.
So why doesn't the NBA just like expand their combine for these guys to then go into the G League or overseas or whatever?
So this is a perfect example. So the first 2 years we did it, it was great. It was the NBA and then our event. And then last year, actually, the NBA created a secondary mini camp, which we thought when they first announced it, we were like, oh my gosh, like this is the end of us. How are we going to get more prospects if they're taking the next round of guys? And it was really like one of those moments where you're like, okay, what exactly are we trying to do here? And what is the impact and the value that we can bring to somebody, right? And what we really realized was that what we're trying to do here is we're trying to find the guys that belong at the NBA, but that just might not have the chance, or might have been injured, or might have transferred, or might have, you know, had a reason where they became ineligible and then they're coming back. Or guys that are coming from small schools that scored a lot of points, but the teams don't yet believe in them. right? And so we've done a great job, and our director of scouting and our team, we did a great job of going above and beyond to find those guys that are intriguing enough to get people to come, but intriguing enough to also really make an impact in the NBA. Because look, if you look at this and you look at life in general, whether it's business or whatever, there's always going to be those people at the top of the line that get all the media attention, that everyone really knows, that everyone always thinks is the best. But there's also a great group of people that for maybe one, whatever reason, their story up to this point has given them, they're two steps behind. But in 2 years, they're going to be five steps above. Mm-hmm. And the one of our players, Kendrick Nunn, in 2018, he came to our event, wasn't invited to the NBA combine. He was in the running for Rookie of the Year this year. Right? Like, it's an amazing opportunity when you believe in somebody and give somebody a chance and a platform and motivate them and provide them that chance to really showcase what they can do. Because sometimes we just need somebody to believe in us. Sometimes we just need that little bit of hope, that little bit of inspiration that reminds ourselves that this is our dream and we got to do what we got to do to get there. And that's what we've tried to really showcase within our combine, to give these guys an opportunity to succeed in life and in sports.
So what do you think? Like, did you see, I'm sure you saw it, The Last Dance that just came out. So one of the things that I kind of asked myself as I'm watching is like, what's the, like all these guys in the NBA, they're all 6'5". They can all dribble. They can all shoot. They all know like the drills to get better. They know what everybody else is doing. They have like the resources per se. So what is the difference in your experience between somebody who is really good and goes on to have an awesome career and ends up, you know, doing great things, and the people who have the same frame as Michael Jordan or Kobe or whatever, but don't go on to be successful long-term?
So it's often the part that people, we don't see. In today's media, we're fortunate now where we can actually get the access to some of the behind the scenes stuff. But if you look at Kobe Bryant, if you look at Michael Jordan, it showed it in The Last Dance. What the best do better than anybody else is they focus on the things that other people don't think are worth their time. They do the mundane. They do the basics. They do the fundamentals. Once they've mastered that, they continue to expand. They also have a drive and a desire that's relentless. They're willing to do what they need to do to get to that next level. And I think about it a lot. Like, if you were to take somebody starting an online business or starting a business, right? And you were to ask them, hey, you know, what's going to make somebody successful and have them speed up their process versus having someone take 5 years to get to that same level if they ever get there? And one of those things is doing the hard work, doing the stuff that people think, whether it's because of their ego, that they don't have to, like they've already made it and they don't have to start over, or just people that really are willing to put in that action. They're willing to surround themselves with the right people, and they're willing to enjoy the process of getting to the end result. And if I look at all the players that have come through our combine, the players that have gone on to be super successful are the ones that have stayed after, right? The ones that are constantly asking their coaches questions. They're the ones that are going into the weight room. They're the ones that are getting a workout after the workout, right? It's doing the things that everybody else does better than them, and then doing the things that other people aren't willing to do to continue to expand upon that skill set to showcase that desire and that drive. And they also, I got to say this too, and this is so important, is they have an undeniable belief in themselves. They're willing to accept the hard facts. Maybe they're cut. Maybe it's going to be a long road. Maybe something happens that derails them along the way. But they're, no matter what happens, is they believe that they're going to get to where they've always dreamed that they can get to.
Where do you think that self-belief comes from? Is it they have always had that growing up, or they found that somewhere along the way, or the way that they were coached, or their parents?
I think self-belief in these type of people comes from a place within. And I think it gets brought to the forefront by having somebody around you that believes in you. When you look at Kobe, when you look at Magic, both of their dads played a significant role in themselves. Okay? If you look at me, I'm a very ambitious person. I've had a few people in my life, my parents specifically, but that have always pushed me to go for something greater. And it comes from this sense, I think part of this comes from this sense of not being afraid to fail, not being afraid to look like an idiot for 5 seconds to become a champion in 5 years. And I think a lot of the self-belief that a lot of people struggle is they are scared of what other people think. They're scared of what will happen if they try and they don't succeed. But when you have somebody that believes in you as much as yourself, or that really truly wants you to win, you can start to take that into yourself and use that as that fuel. And then I think the other part of it comes from the real champions. I think another aspect comes in when you have people that doubt you. Like, if you doubt me, I am going to prove you wrong. And it's not because I want to just prove you wrong and say, ha ha, but it's because I just know that I'm willing to do what it takes. And you just added salt into the wound that's going to exacerbate my fire, right? Like, you're just igniting what I really believe already. Now you're just bringing it out of me. So I think it can come from both of those avenues.
Interesting. So me personally, I've never been motivated by like proving other people wrong. It's never been like an intrinsic motivation. I think that I'm always motivated. I'm super, I guess as I've grown, it's kind of matured. It's kind of changed, but I've been more motivated by like just looking at something awesome that I've done and just like the pride in that. And just kind of thinking about like the journey. Like, I was talking to one of my friends the other day about like the journey to figure out the offer that I've built my business off now, and how at this point it's been like 9 months. We're 3 iterations of the VSL in. We're on like the second iteration of the program, and our team has grown from just me to six or seven people now. I was talking to my assistant who lives in the Philippines, and she's talking about how, she's telling me about how like she came on and she's like, yeah, I didn't even think that you were legit because it was just you. And there's a lot of scams out there. And now she's like, this is like the best thing. And it's like so awesome what we've built. So I think that I'm super motivated by that. But in order to be motivated by that, you also have to like taste that first and to know what it's like and like feel the success of it to then be motivated by that in the future. Cause at the beginning I was just motivated by like, I want to make money. I just want to not have a job and not have to answer to anybody and get paid. So what do you think in these athletes, what do you think is the, let's say like you have somebody and you're like, okay, like you look at their numbers or whatever, and you're like, okay, you need to run this much faster and you need to shoot at this percentage and you need to reduce your turnovers this much or whatever. What is the then process? Because what is basically the process to improve from there? Because for in entrepreneurship, especially like most of the people listening are entrepreneurs, there is like, we all know like the things to do to get better, the things that we need to improve to get better: copywriting, sales, leadership, hiring and managing and organization and systems. And like, we know like the blocking and tackling per se, but a lot of people just don't know how to get better. So if you have an athlete that's shooting maybe 20% or something, and you're like, you need to shoot 30% or 25%, what is the way, or do you just tell them like, just shoot 10,000 shots and that'll improve? Or do you say like, pick up this book on like the mechanics, or do you film them and then watch the film and say, okay, here's where you're fucking up or whatever. Like, what is the process to improve?
I mean, the process to improve in anything in life, right, comes down to one, acknowledging that what you're doing isn't working, right? Because as we know, if you continue to do the same thing over and over again and expect a different result, that's the definition of insanity, right? So we have to understand that on the first onset that what we're doing isn't working. Now, a lot of people will continue to do that, make very small adjustments, but not get to the root of the issue. And that's where improvement really slows, because sure, if you keep shooting, you will get better. But if you want to get really good, you need to find somebody that's better than you, learn from them, take what's worked for them and re-engineer it for yourself, right? So if you were to try to expand, whether in your business or on the basketball court, right? If I'm trying to become a better passer, I need to watch film of people that were great passers. I need to study their foot movements. I need to watch when they speed up and when they slow down. I need to look at how do they dribble? How many dribbles does it take them to get from point A to point B? What does their footwork look like? What does their jump shot look like? Where's their follow through? What are they doing when the camera changes from them to the hoop? Where are they standing on the court? How quickly do they react? What are they doing to talk to their coaches? What questions are they asking? I think a big piece of improvement is, a lot of times we think we're seeking a certain answer, But oftentimes what we need to do is ask the right question, because we'll get the answer that we didn't even know we actually needed that can make the drastic change in a quicker time, in a quicker amount of time. And I think that that's something that's super, super important when you want to talk about improvement is, one, understand the root, get very clear on what it is that you're not, what it is that you're doing that's not working. Then figure out somebody or something that's doing it better than you are. Learn from them. Ask the right questions so you can get the answers that you need, not the answers that you want. And then start to implement those in small steps and repeated steps over time will continue to produce the results that you're hoping to achieve. That's how I see the wheel of improvement constantly working. And I think that relates to anybody, right? Like if I wanted to get better at Facebook ads, right? If what I'm doing isn't producing a positive ROI for this campaign, I need to evaluate. I need to look at what have I done that has worked, right? Mm-hmm. And you know this, right? Now we're speaking entrepreneurial language. And then you go find someone who's done it, ask them the questions, see where you're making your mistake, make the adjustment, and continue to learn and implement things that are more advanced than where you currently are.
Yeah.
If you do that, you're going to win.
One of the things that I tell all my clients, because all my clients are basically agency owners, and I'm like, I kind of compare it to sports. I'm like, in agency, there's only four things that could be wrong. Either you're not booking appointments, you're not closing, the appointments are not showing up, you're not closing them, or you're not retaining clients. That's it. So it's like, you know, in basketball, there's only a handful of issues that you could, of course, there's like IQ and stuff, and stuff like that. That's another element, but like business IQ, same thing. But it's like, okay, you could suck at passing, you could suck at shooting, you could suck at defense, or you could suck at whatever fourth thing, right? And then by looking at, so I teach agency owners, and I'm like super, like I talk about this all the time. I'm like, you need to be tracking, like have some sort of tracking. In sports, there's tracking, like, you know, your shot percentage, you know, your turnover percentage, you know, all these different things. And then you know what you need to work on. So in business, first step and the biggest mistake I made for like 3 years was just not tracking effectively anything. I literally just woke up and I ran my business based off what I call gut feeling philosophy, which is like you wake up and you're like, you know, what does my gut tell me I need to work on today or whatever? And that's it. And I wondered like why I was spinning my wheels for so long. And now we track everything. Like I track how many people see my ads on a day-to-day basis. Of those that see the ads, how many click? What percentage is that? How many of the ones that click, how many land on the landing page? What percentage opt in? Of the ones that opt in, how many book a call? Of the ones that book a call, how many show up? Of the ones that show up, how many close? And of the ones that close, how many close on the first call, on the second call? How many are one call closes? How many are were cold, meaning like they're like, who's JR? I don't know what this call's for. I don't remember filling anything out. And how many were good fits? So start to finish, top to bottom, I look on one spreadsheet and I'm like, all right, this week our closing rate was, last week it was 20%, this week it was 10%. It's like no mystery why we're not where we need to be. I always know like what numbers are important to getting us where we need to be. So I think that I always try to simplify things and try to compare. I try to find philosophies that are universally true across sports, across like watching The Last Dance. I'm looking for like, okay, what's true that Michael Jordan does that would apply directly to what I do. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the biggest things, is just like measuring things and then asking myself like, okay, of course, like if your shot isn't going in, it's probably like 3 to 5 things that could be wrong. Your footwork, and I don't know shit about shooting, so your footwork, your shot mechanics, where you're releasing the ball, how you're holding the ball. I'm sure there's only like a handful of things that could be wrong, but most people, they don't track accurate enough metrics and then ask themselves, okay, how could I improve these metrics? Okay, how am I holding the ball? Where am I catching the ball? How am I dipping the ball? I played a little bit of JV basketball, so I know. So I was terrible though. I scored 12 points the entire season.
That's all right. That's all right. You showed up.
Yeah. And it was a good lesson though. Like it was, I wouldn't take it back, but I never excelled at any kind of sports in high school. I did track as well. And I did it mainly just to like hang out with my friends and get out of school early. But I guess the point is that if you are listening and there is something that you're not good at, whether it be at business, sports, whatever, are you tracking your metrics? And do you even know like where your metrics should be? Because I ask people like, hey, what's your show up rate? No idea. Do you know what your show up rate should be? no idea. So, is there anything that you do to help athletes like get a good, I guess the combine, it gives them a good idea of where they're at, but, from there, is there anything that you give them to kind of track their improvement or increase their output or anything like that?
So for us, the way our event works, it's kind of like a one and done, right? So we bring guys through there and we, of course, we get all the metrics, right? Like that's one of the big things of a combine is you evaluate the metrics that are not just the eye test, right? Because the eye test is super important, but you look at all these other metrics, their speed, their agility, their lateral movement, all these things. And then from there, you evaluate and compare them to other people, and then you take what they do on the court. And then they kind of move on in the process from our stuff. But what we wanted to do, because I do believe in analytics, I do believe in metrics, and I'm not saying that in basketball it'll ever replace simply watching somebody and telling if they're better than somebody else or not, right? Like there's just in sports, you can just
visit. That is true. Like you will see players that have almost identical stats, but one will be significantly better.
And that's the same thing in business too. There are people that are just better businessmen or women than other people. There are people that are just able to command a room better than other people. There are people that are better able to sell than other people, right? Of course, you can continuously improve, but there is a baseline. There is a baseline and there is just that innate ability, right? But what we wanted to do was we were like, okay, what can we offer? Because our guys, right, they're fighting for their spot. We want to give them a chance to surpass other people that are ranked higher than them or that are potentially going to be picked higher than them or drafted higher, right? And so we were like, let's create an advanced combine. So what we did was we brought in a few different technologies and actually created advanced testing that featured more on game-like situation to measure some of the skills that create the best players possible. So for example, and I'll just give you one, is we created a test that's based on like Zion Williamson's athleticism. So Zion Williamson, for anyone that doesn't know, he was the first pick of this year's draft. He has the most amazing bounce, can dunk, do all these incredible things. But what he's unbelievable at is his second bounce. As soon as he jumps up, he can hit the ground and get back up higher before most people can get down and launch up again. Mm-hmm. And so we wanted to create something called the vertical explosiveness test. And what our goal was to test and see, do big guys who go up to block a shot come down and jump and grab a rebound quicker than a guy who's 4 inches smaller but has much more explosiveness on that second jump, right? Because look, if you have a guy, let's say 7 feet, and he jumps up and he hits 10 feet, comes to the ground, and it takes him, let's just say, 2 seconds, and then he jumps up again, okay? But you take a guy who's 6'8", 6'9", who jumps up, jumps back down in 1.4 seconds, jumps up and has the same elevation, he might actually be higher than the 7-footer on that rebound. In theory, and this is what we were trying to test, in theory, that player may be more valuable in those situations than the guy who we assume would be better just because he's taller. And so we were trying to find and identify different metrics and analytics to showcase, to add to the eye test, to add to the tangible skill set that we can see. And I relate that a lot to business, right? You look at whatever it is that you're doing. You look at your strengths. You're a great salesman. Okay, awesome. That's great. But how quickly are you turning this client around, right? On what touch point is that person converting? How do your ads go, right? And just like you said, you look at those things and could you make a tweak that enhances that? And if so, are you willing to test it? Are you willing to test and maybe make the mistake along the way in order to see a greater result at the end? And we can correlate this to sports, to business, to whatever it is that somebody's trying to achieve. But I love the idea of analytics enhancing what already exists, which is somebody's ability to do the XYZ task that they're seeking to do.
What do you think are some of the like smallest things that you see guys get the most ROI or draft equity for that are relatively simple that you don't see them do often or inherently?
So you're asking like, what do some of the guys do that's not always visible?
Yeah. Or just like unorthodox or not well known.
Yeah. So one of the things that sometimes people forget about is at the end of the day, whatever it is that you're doing in life, you're interviewing, right? And if you're on a sales call, you're interviewing them to see if they're going to be a good fit for you. And they're interviewing you to see if they should invest with you. In basketball, if you're a player going to the league, You're being interviewed by how do you treat your teammates? How do you respond to your coaches when they tell you to do something that you don't want to do? And how do you conduct yourself in a professional interview with the teams or the executives or the scouts and the draft prospects? We actually had one player come to our program, and the reason he dropped to us and came to our event was because teams didn't think he had the right attitude. And they didn't want that, even though his talent level was incredible, they weren't going to put him on their roster or draft him because they thought he would fizzle out and they didn't think he'd mm-hmm. be a longevity guy. He comes to our event, everyone interviewed him, they instantly changed his mind, and he went on to have a pretty great career in his first couple of years. And so what I think is one of the most important skill sets that we can have as human beings is our ability to authentically connect with somebody in every situation and be willing to be open about what it is that we're trying to do, what it is that our story that's got us there, and being not being afraid to showcase who we really are. Because the personality that we have inside of us is great. We just need to let that roll. We need to let that fly. And that's the name of the game when you want to build a business, when you want to interact with people. And so some of the players that have performed the best, even if their skill sets aren't incredible, are the people that have been able to conduct themselves really well with their teammates. They possess leadership qualities. The teams can really enjoy them, and they're very coachable. When you can do those things, it enhances your skill sets because you make people better. It enhances the value that you bring to the table because you're making everybody better and you're not just always focused on yourself and your stats. I always look for players who are focused on something other than just how many points they score. Why? Because points they scored is sexy. It's glamorous. But if you have 6 turnovers and no assists, you're valuable to me. And we've seen over the years, those people have been able to perform at an incredible level. And continue to get opportunities when on the naked eye test, they might not just get those. But because they do the intangibles, it helps them. And I think it's the same thing across the line in life.
What did you think of in the Last Dance when there some people, I guess, were portraying Michael Jordan as like a tyrant? Do you think that to be as – I kind of had this internal, I guess, dialogue about like to be that good – do you have to be a tyrant? Or another person that I follow closely is Tom Brady. And I watched, he has a movie series thing on Facebook Watch called Tom Versus Time. And in there he says, I don't lead from a place of fear and intimidation. I lead from a place of joy and love. And they're kind of polar opposites to what was portrayed by Michael Jordan in the documentary to what Tom Brady does, but it's obviously like both worked for both of them. So what's kind of your take on that?
Man, that's a wonderful question. They are like it's really incredible. And I think, and I don't know if there's one simple answer. Okay. Because if you look at some of the greatest businessmen in the world, some of the greatest entrepreneurs in the world, there's different styles of how they've been able to build their companies, different leadership styles.
Yeah. Well, like Bill Gates and Steve Jobs both been portrayed as like tyrant assholes in the past as well.
Everybody has their style. What I think is synonymous across the board is they have an unwavering belief in themselves, as we talked about earlier, but they also have this desire to continue to win, right? And Tom Brady will do whatever it takes to win. He continues to spend money and money and money to take care of his body. LeBron James spends over $1 million a year to make sure he can perform at his best level. The people that are able to compete and able to drive the results like those guys, they do the things that no one else is willing to do, and they do the things that everyone else is willing to do better than they do, right? Which goes back to something that we talked about earlier. And if you look at the greatest players of all time, they've also been incredibly good at doing one thing better than everybody else, right? If you look at Tom Brady, he's been able to be consistently incredible, right? At playing quarterback, right? If you look at Kobe Bryant, he was incredible at continuing to produce night in, night out, right? Everything that we do comes down to how clear are we on where it is that we're trying to go, and do we have the action steps that are in alignment with that? And then on top of it, there's this just innate mental piece, right? That's a whole nother component of understanding where it is you want to go and how do you get there from a mental place? How do you create the games inside your own head? How do you set yourself up for success? How do you continue to want to win, right? Because you say Tom Brady comes from a place of joy and love. Joy and love to inspire his teammates to win. Michael Jordan comes from a place of he's going to kick his teammates' ass to get them to a place where they're ready to win. But guess what? They both have the same desire to win. And that, I think, is one of the key components. But I think in terms of the style, I think there's something that can be said about each one of these people, because there's just different styles to human beings. And what worked for Michael might not have worked for Tom, and vice versa, right? And I think that that's just something that we continue to look into, that really drives home this idea of what does it take to be the best in what you do. And I think a lot of it comes down to really understanding what are you really trying to do. And for them, it's win championships. And that's the ultimate goal. And they continue to break down it into more accessible steps, whether it's helping their teammates, getting their mental game right, keeping their health right, keeping their performance physically right, whatever it is, they break each one of those categories down and continue to execute at the highest level they possibly can.
What do you think is, do you think that people that you see, draft prospects that are motivated more by, I'm sure you see some that are mainly motivated by money. And then I'm sure that you see others that are motivated by other things. Do you see any correlation between what their motivation is and their level of success long-term? Meaning, do you think people are more successful when they're more motivated by money long-term, or do you think that they're more successful when they're more motivated by winning or being the best version of themselves or fame or whatever?
Dude, another wonderful question. Something that I often like to talk about with people in my circle. And, you know, one of the things that I think drives people to be the best is they have a why. They simply have a why that's stronger and bigger than just themselves. And for some people, that why is to have money so they can be the richest person ever. For some people, it's they grew up in poverty and they're tired of being poor and they want to get their mom their first house. And so they're going to do whatever it takes. And I think that when you look at a lot of successful people that are really high performers in their life, they all have something that constantly is driving them, and they all have a why within themselves, right? And like, if you were to ask me, like if I didn't have a reason to do the things that I do, I probably wouldn't be as motivated to do them, right? My belief in myself may be the same, but I might not have the motivation to do it, right? If I didn't taste a little bit, if I didn't get that first sell, if I didn't hear that cha-ching go off, you know, when I sold my first product, like, would that have, you know, it would have been harder to keep on going. But the reason that you keep on going is because you have this why within you. And for me, my why is to be able to have ultimate freedom, which is to do what I want, when I want, with who I want at any time in my life. That's what success looks like to me. And I also have people that I continuously want to do things for. So I owe it to them and to myself that I have to show up every day and give it my all so that I can do those things and have the freedom that I want. And I think when you look at successful people, athletes, businessmen, businesswomen, realtors, agency owners, whatever it may be, it comes from, you got to have a reason to keep you going at a level that's sustainable and sustainable for you at the highest point. That's what greatness is. When you can consistently sustain high performance at a long time, that's when you become in your own category. That's why LeBron is on pace to be the greatest, if not one of the greatest players in the game of basketball, because he is going to play at such a high level for so long. Because there are a lot of great players that play for, you know, 4 years and are all-stars for 4 years. But LeBron's going to do it 16 to 20 times. That's greatness. And that's the same thing. And it comes from having this why and this drive of doing something that's bigger than just for yourself.
So do you think that if they're motivated by money, it's no different than if they're motivated by fame or just winning, or as long as they're motivated, as long as they have a reason to be doing this?
I think there's different motivators. And I think it comes from everyone's situation is different, right? If you have one guy who's motivated for money, just because, let's just say, right, that if he's motivated for money, and you have another guy that's motivated for money, but also has a reason why that money is going to be important to him, that person may have more of an edge than the person who's just motivated by money, because that situation is more than just money, right? Sure, people can be motivated by the same things, but the strength at which they're motivated by that thing can impact their performance and their willingness to do whatever it is they want to do, right? There are athletes that are motivated by getting that second contract. And as soon as they get that second contract, their performance slips. They're athletes that when they know they have 1 year left in their contract and they maybe get one more maybe, but they're on the fringe, they're going to put out because their motivation is different. Even though people might have that same money motivation, that fame motivation, the reason behind that money can be different. The steps to take with that could be different. The end goal could be different. And that's why every human being has a different definition of success that is their duty to pursue. And that's how I kind of would break that down.
So I've seen I can't remember who said this. It was some NBA player, but he said that there's guys that can perform really well in practice, but can't perform in a game.
Oh yeah.
So that's a result of some sort of like psychological phenomenon or mindset or whatever. So is there any part of the combine, or have you thought about this? Like that's like some kind of like psychological evaluation or something like that.
Yeah. So we wanted to put guys through a variety of different things. We have thought about it, and it's definitely something that we'll continue to look forward to include, because I do think, and we had an example where we had guys make decisions on the spot and more time making their decisions because we wanted to test their decision-making and how they respond to situations that are out of their control. Because oftentimes when you're playing basketball, the defense may change up their scheme and it may throw you off what you expected them to do. And how do you respond? How do you react? And so I think that there is a huge part of understanding that, but I think it also goes deeper than just, you know, decision-making. It goes down to how you view what we call pressure, right? Mm-hmm. When pressure is on the line, which is in practice, there's no pressure because nobody's watching you. But as soon as there are people watching you, you put yourself in a situation of pressure. And pressure comes from a place of fear, of scarcity. Because if you feel pressure and you really let pressure win, it's because you're scared that if you were to try and it didn't work out, you'd be embarrassed, right? If you take basketball players, and I've experienced this firsthand, is when I would play in practice, there's no pressure. You can do whatever you want. You let it fly, you're loose or whatever. And come into a game, and then there have been times for me when I played growing up, that the pressure, I wouldn't want that shot, that last shot at the end of a game, right? And this is the difference between the great players and the average players. There were times when I was growing up, I didn't want that shot because I was scared that if I missed it, it would be my fault. But as I got older, that shot became the thing that I wanted most. And not only did I start to mentally grow, but I started to take control. And one, if I missed that shot, the world didn't end. I was still all right. And two, when I made that shot, well, that was one of the greatest feelings ever. And so for me, I want the pressure. I want to be dependent on what I can do. But I also know that as we go down that route, I also know how important it is to be around the right team and the right people. But in terms of that mentality, there's a huge difference between a practice player and a game player. And it comes from this mental state. And I think a lot of it comes from a fear and insecurity of not being able to try, of not being able to succeed, a fear of embarrassing yourself, a fear of wondering that maybe you aren't meant to be on the big stage. Mm-hmm. And it's tough. But I do think there's a huge difference between practice and game.
Yeah, I think one of the reasons why I was so terrible at JV basketball was I was so scared to like miss open layups that I would miss open layups. Like it was like I was known for missing open layups. And it was, thinking back, it was just like a fear of like embarrassment, pretty much, that drove me to not like to just be afraid to like take these shots. And I kind of think about it now. So for a while, I kind of just hid from pressure in everywhere in my life. Like I was like, oh, I don't want the pressure of like employees and stuff like that. And I just convinced myself that I just wanted to like be free and be able to do whatever I want and all this stuff. But as I've gotten older and just better at business and stuff, I have started to kind of like look at pressure as like a good thing, because one of the sayings that I always default to is like, heavy is the head that wears the crown. So it's like, there's no way, there's no success, there's no like doing anything great without an immense amount of pressure. And another thing that I say is like, if you don't like, if you can't stand the pressure of being poor, then you can't stand the pressure of being rich, because there's so much more that comes with it. So I think that for me, the main thing that's transitioned was that's transitioned me from feeling like, oh, I don't want to have a lot of pressure in my life to being like, you know, bring on the problems and the pressure, because that means that we're getting better. And the more pressure I take on and the harder things are, the more I improve as a person. So I think the biggest thing for me to make that shift was just doing this longer and just taking on more responsibility over time and getting excited by the accomplishments and then excited by the goals and knowing that like the goals, I remember one time my first month that I started using like American Express credit cards to get rewards points and stuff like that for my business. Credit card bill is like 20 grand or something. And I'm like, damn, like I'm going through and I'm like, where, like, how did I do this? Like what's going on? Why am I spending so much? And then I kind of stopped and I was like, this is what you wanted. Like you wanted to build a business and you should be grateful that you can spend this money to grow your business and pay it off every month without having to worry. And this is what comes with the business and the life that you want. Same thing with like getting freaked out when my business expenses and stuff started to grow as we grew and saying like, holy crap, like our overhead just base operation every month is like 10 grand. Like we need to make 10 grand just to live. And then again, I was like, this is what I wanted. Like I wanted to grow and make more money, and obviously making more money is going to come with more expenses. So I think that the biggest thing for me is just looking at pressure as like, this is a sign that we're improving. Like if you don't have client problems unless you have clients, and you don't have business problems unless you have a business. So if you don't have problems and you don't have pressure, then you're like the old saying goes, to avoid criticism, do nothing, say nothing, be nothing. So it's kind of pretty interesting how that kind of showed up for me in high school when I was 15, and then kind of like stuck with me throughout like my adulthood until I kind of decided to just like, hey, let's face this. So what do you think is like in the like, kind of like the nature versus nurture argument, what do you think is the difference in players? Cause like the LeBron James didn't have a dad in his life, went on to crush it. And then I'm sure you see people that have single mothers, single parent homes, dual parent homes. How big of a difference, like what do you see in the people that are like emotionally healthy in on the court and can like make decisions quickly and can deal with pressure? What do you see in the differences in like their upbringing and coaching at a young age versus people that maybe can't do that as well?
Yeah. So, I mean, a lot of this, to be honest, related to this question, like we don't work with the guys growing up, right? So it's not like we work right with them growing up until they come to us, and then we take it to the next level. But you know, when you look at some of these players in their AAU programs, right? Like LeBron will talk about a coach that he had that helped him understand what he was capable of, right? Mm-hmm. Look, there are things in your life, and my mom calls this, I don't know exactly what she calls it, but she talks about like there's this angel. And there are people, when you're going down a bad road or when you have the opportunity, when you come to that fork in the road, you know, some people, why do some people end up in the gutter on drugs and other people end up in stardom? They have the same baseline. They have the same talent. They have the same height. But why does one guy end up in the NBA? One guy's poor and on the streets. And a lot of that sometimes comes from that angel person, right? That person that when you don't even realize it's happening is there for you, is talking to you, is lifting up that internal dialogue that you have, because we go back to pressure, right? It's that internal dialogue. You were afraid to miss layups, so therefore you missed layups. What we talk about in our mind, this voice inside of our head is so powerful, right? Yeah. That's why they talk about, don't talk about what you're going to, talk about what you're already doing as if it's happening, right? Every day I talk about I am, right? I do my I am statements of even if things that aren't happening yet, but that are going to happen as if they've already happened. Because what we feed our mind and what we tell ourselves can help us focus on getting the things that we so strongly desire in our life. And when you talk about this, it's about surrounding yourself with the great people. It's about making the conscious decisions to continue to go down this right path. I mean, when you talk about how our habits built, right? How our habits built, you talk about the cue, the craving, the reward, right? You talk about that, talk about this loop and this circle of like what causes something. Why do you want it? Because you light up. And then what do you do? What's the expectation, the result? And when we talk about these people, when you talk about athletes, it's about understanding that if they continue to do this, well, this is the result that happened. So therefore, they're going to continue to dunk the basketball. They're going to continue to jump higher. They're going to continue to make threes. They continue to treat their teammates better. They continue to listen to their coach better, because all those things lead to a positive result that makes them feel that they belong, that makes them feel that they matter. It gives them their sanctuary. You'll hear a lot of people in life and in sports, they have a place where they can go to, whether it's a place inside your head, whether it's a physical place, where you can go, where you feel safe. It's your serenity place. It's your place where when everything else is going on, that place centers you. That place brings you back. And it goes back to this idea of just understanding that the thoughts that we tell ourselves are the thoughts that we continue to live and that we continue to act on. Because an action comes from a thought. And that thought oftentimes comes from something external. So that's what I would kind of have to say related to that. And I think with the athletes and businessmen and women and people in general, like, there are moments where people look out for you, and there are moments where you make choices based off the hope of the expectation of the result that you're looking for, that you desire.
What are some habits that you've seen athletes have that have helped them perform at a higher level? Like waking up early, like you mentioned, I am statements, affirmations, whatever. What have you seen other people do that you think has contributed to their success?
Routines in terms of morning routines are imperative. I mean, I think morning routines, you know, my buddy Brian is one of the lead trainers for Tony Robbins. And he talks about how important his morning routine is. Every day he does the same thing. Every day he tries. My morning routine is so important. You look at a lot of athletes and coaches. These high performers have routines because it makes it a non-negotiable. I was just talking with this guy this morning. We were having a call, and he was talking about how we don't lack time. We lack priorities. And oftentimes that's the key to getting further results in a quicker amount of time. But when you think about routines, right, it's about prioritizing the things that are going to give you the best result over a duration of time. So for me, when I think about my routine is I read every single morning. Now I could take you through my whole routine, but one of those encompasses reading for about 20 plus minutes every single morning. I do that, one, because I really enjoy reading, but two, I do that because I know that the more knowledge I consume, the more knowledge I have to operate with, and the more knowledge that I have to operate, the better I can take action in the direction that I'm trying to go to get the things that I've always desired. So when it comes to routines, I mean, there are some things that they say across the board that people just need to do. And if you want to perform at a high level, it's same. I mean, I'll break it down. The most simple things, and these are all things we know we should be doing, yet for some reason, we just don't do them all the time, right? Consuming knowledge, asking questions, being a good listener, waking up early in the morning, exercising, eating right, doing all those things, meditation, expressing gratitude, all of these things. Millions and millions of people will tell you how important they are. But for some reason, not all of us do it. And part of that reason is because we don't have a system in place that executes on that. And when you talk specifically with basketball players, if you think about doing things over and over and over again, some of the best players will warm up shooting 1 to 2 to 3 foot jumpers. They'll work on their form. They will do dribbling. They will stretch. They will put on their socks the correct way. That's John Wooden's famous thing. Michael Jordan, The Last Dance, you saw this. He laced his own pair of shoes every single time. When it comes to it, there's routines that give you a sense of comfort that allow you to progress to that next level. And for everybody, that routine could be different, but there's commonalities in the highest performers. And if you want to be a high performer, you got to start doing what the other high performers are doing in your own way that makes sense based off what you desire.
Right. And I kind of think about that as like, you know, if you took somebody like Jeff Bezos and you were like, hey, you have to build a company, but you only get to do 4 hours a day. And then you took me and you're like, okay, you get to build a company, but you get 15 hours a day. He would probably still beat me because, he has the right knowledge. He has the right, connections. He has the right routines. So I've often, like when you said, do what other people do what successful people do. That's been like my thing for 2020 is like, what are successful people doing And more importantly, how are they thinking? Like, how are they problem solving and figuring out information to solve problems? So I've been reading a lot of books by billionaires and stuff like that. One of my favorites that I've read lately was by, he's not a billionaire, but Tim Ferriss, and Tools of the Titans, where he interviews all these like billionaires and like the world-class performers and all these different things. And one of the things he said is, in the beginning of the book, he's like, here's the common things I found between all these people. And he's like, 80% of them have like a morning routine. 80% of them have some kind of mindfulness practice or whatever. So it's like all the things that you just kind of laid out. So that's super cool, man. We're pretty much out of time here. So let everybody know where they can find you and your book and stuff like that.
Yeah, for sure. So, I mean, on social media, the best place to find me right now is at Jake Kelfer, J-A-K-E-K-E-L-F-E-R. And then for anyone that's listening, if you go to my Instagram, you know, and you click the link, I'll get you guys all a free copy of my book, Elevate Your Network, which is all about how to build extraordinary relationships in life and business. It's the 25 secrets, the principles that I've been able to use to grow multiple businesses to a great level that's enabled me to have a life of freedom and success. So it's great. And that's how the best way to get to me. But anyone that listens would love to hear your story, would love to hear what works for you, what doesn't work for you. If you have questions, ask, engage. That's what social media is for. Let's engage, let's connect, let's talk. But at Jake Kelfer is the best way to connect with me, or jakekelfer.com.
Cool, man. Thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, JR, thanks for having me, man.
Hey, if you enjoyed this podcast, and I'd be forever grateful if you left us a 5-star review on the app you're listening on so we can help more people. And if you want more content like this, then click that subscribe button now. And until next time, my friends, stay leveraged.